Okay. Happy New Year to everyone. And thank you. And welcome to the first meditation class here at Dhammaloka for 2021. So if this is the first time you're coming here to learn meditation, we do have an ongoing meditation course to your left in that little room on the side there. Oh, is it the community hall now? Sorry. Okay. I'm still from the old school when I used to come here. Haven't come here for a while. So if you're learning meditation there, you get a course for 4 weeks and it builds on what you're learning every week. Here we have a bit of an introduction talking about meditation, and then we sit together for about 40, 45 minutes. So if you're not used to meditate, then that might be a little bit long. But even if you're not used to, please feel free to stay here as well. You are welcome to, get up or go and sit on a chair if your body can't sit for an extended period of time. Okay, so I was teaching meditation a little while ago to the Armadale group, and someone asked a question there which kind of lingered in my mind. They were asking what the difference is between relaxation and meditation. And that was kind of the first thing which programmed my mind a little bit. And the other thing which is happening from February onwards, we have a new early Buddhism teaching workshop, and we will be talking about the Eightfold Path. About the path, the training path, how to overcome suffering. So instead of giving specific meditation instructions today, I thought I would like to give you a bit of an overview where meditation actually fits into this whole path, to give you a bit of perspective and to show you that it's not just about the meditation, that these things all come together and support each other. So one of the very famous quotes that is often quoted is, "To avoid all that is bad, to cultivate what is good, and to purify one's mind. This is the teachings of all the Buddhas." So that's from the Dhammapada 183, and that's already a summary there for you of the Eightfold Path. But I would like to go through the eight factors of the path and show you how they fit in with meditation, why they're there, and how they can support the meditation that we will be practicing together afterwards. So the Eightfold Path starts with right view or with right understanding. What does that mean? It means that we understand that our actions, and that is also our thoughts, our words, and our speech, they have consequences. So they color our mind when we've done something, when we've thought something, or when we have performed an action. It's not just magically gone. It kind of lingers. It imprints in our minds. And therefore, it is important to think about that as well, because when we sit down to meditate, these things will still be there. When we are meditating, we have the same mind that we had before in our life there. So with right view, we start to understand that our actions have consequences. And we also understand that there are skillful things we can do and that there are unskillful things that we can do, helpful or unhelpful things. And how does that fit into meditation? So in meditation, we will be thinking because that's what the mind is doing all the time. And then we have to make sure that we think in a way that is wholesome. And when we think in wholesome ways, that will actually help us to calm the mind down and to start to let go of thinking eventually. The other thing which is important as well is that we understand that things are changing all the time. That is also right view if we understand that. And if we understand that they're changing all the time, we are not so inclined to hold on to these things so strongly. So when right view is there, it really helps your meditation as well. And it flows into the second factor of the Eightfold Path, into what we call the right motivation. If we understand that our actions have consequences, we of course want to make sure that we do things in a way that those consequences are wholesome and not harmful to ourselves and also to other beings. And Ajahn Brahm talks about the second factor of the Eightfold Path a lot. And that's actually the words down here that you can read. So his interpretation of right motivation, the second factor on the Eightfold Path, is make peace, be kind, and be gentle. So it's renouncing things and kindness and gentleness. And when we do that, we are actually counteracting some other thought patterns, some other motivations that we might have in life. So the other things that are not standing down here because we don't encourage them is sensual desire, ill will, and cruelty or force is the opposite of those three things. So we are letting go, we are letting be, we are showing love and acceptance to whatever is there. We are caring and we are soothing. That basically means having right attitude, caring. And I often like to use the word curiosity. So whatever will be happening in your meditation, please be curious about it. Don't get angry about it or, you know, try to get rid of it. Be curious. But do it with a lot of care and love at the same time. So the word there is curiosity. And now for the people who know a little bit about Buddhism, in meditation, we are trying to overcome the five hindrances to get into a nice meditation. And when we followed those first two steps, we're already making sure that the hindrance of sensual desire and the hindrance of ill will is not there. So when you're making peace, when you're being kind, when you're being gentle, then those two hindrances become less and less and less, until they might even disappear temporarily for a period of time. Then the next thing on the path, which I mentioned during the Armadale group teaching, which I find is so important, is the part on sila, is the part on right speech, right action, and right livelihood. So I try to encourage people to realize, again, what they're doing in their day-to-day life is gonna impact on their meditation. So if you have right speech, if you're truthful, if you bring people together, if you care for other people, if you care for yourself, if you have no actions that are harmful towards other people or yourself, like harming or killing living beings, or hurting people, hurting yourself even, that's the right action there. And then the right livelihood as well. So see that in your work, you don't harm yourself and you don't harm the people around you. And that will have a very, very strong impact on your life, but also on your meditation. So very often meditation is taught without mentioning this sila part, without mentioning how important it is to purify the mind through our actions already. So I just want to give you a little example. I was sitting in the hall after the meal at our monastery a couple of days ago, and because I don't eat that quickly, people started to come up to talk to Ajahn Brahm, and one of the people came up and bowed and said he wanted to talk to me. And he said, I remember, I don't know how many years ago it is, but I remember you were the monk when it was raining and I was stuck at the meditation hall. Before lunch, you walked past with an umbrella and you offered to take me down to the Dhanasala, to the main place where we have the meal served. And I couldn't even remember it. But just him mentioning that made me very, very happy. So if we do something wholesome, if we do something good, it has an impact on our mind. And when I sat meditation that day after lunch, I had that energy and that happiness from what I've done in the past, which I've actually already forgotten, but because the person reminded me, it brought up this joy, purity of mind. And when we have that, then the meditation becomes much, much easier. Actually, when the person came up, I said, I can't even remember, but I'm very, very happy that you're mentioning this. And whichever monk it was, I'm rejoicing in the action that was done there and in you remembering that act. So let's try to do sila outside of meditation, but also use it inside of meditation. How could we do that? So try to speak, act, and live harmoniously with your body, with your thoughts and emotions, and then also with your breath when it arises in meditation. So it's exactly the same thing. If we relate to the people out in the world in a nice way, we get nice results. If we behave in the same manner towards ourselves, our minds and our bodies, it will create harmony and it will create a purity and a power which we need for meditation. Because very often we are kind of tired or we lack a bit of oomph for our meditation, and that's where that power and where that oomph actually comes from. And when we practice this, we take care of another two hindrances of the five hindrances. So we make sure that there isn't restlessness and remorse, because restlessness and remorse very often comes with if we think we haven't done the right thing, if we said something, if we hurt someone, it lingers and it creates friction in our mind. It creates an unease in our mind. And very often if it's there, we work with that, we accept it, we love it, and we make sure it dissipates. But we can also focus on the positive things and then bring those things with us into meditation. So the first first of those two hindrances, so restlessness and remorse, is taken care of. And then the other one, dullness and sleepiness as well. Very often, dullness and sleepiness, of course, comes because we've done too much. And then it's okay when we meditate and we fall asleep for a little while, because that's what the body needs at that time. But that energy and purity of the mind that I was talking about, if that is there, you can take that with you into your meditation. And then we have the next three factors that deal with meditation there. I just want to mention them in passing here. So once we have purified the mind, we can start to purify it even more with right application or right endeavor. Very often that word that people use there is right effort. And people get the wrong idea there. They think, you know, I sit down, I want to become peaceful, and I have to put in effort or I have to achieve something here. But actually, it's just taking these beautiful qualities that I was talking about before and encouraging those qualities in our mind. So right application or right endeavor basically just means to let go of the unwholesome, or to make sure that it doesn't even come into our minds. So when there is positivity, it's not going to come in anyway, because that's what we're focusing on. And then inviting the wholesome qualities in and making sure that they start to grow, that they start to show and even sparkle or shine. So a little example for you there. So all the work we've done before is like when you have a car which is kind of dirty because you've been in the desert or there was a storm or whatever. So you hose it down, you wash it, you make sure it's nice and clean, but you don't stop there. The right application and the right endeavor means that you really shine up your car. So we have taken care of the cleaning part of the car, and now with right application, we start to shine it up. So we start to shine up the mind. And that is another point. I think that's the most important point that I want to remember from this little talk today. A beautiful and a pure mind is what leads to beautiful and pure meditation. Surprise, surprise! So that's why the whole path is important there. The whole preparation there is important there as well. So That that way you make sure that your mind is at ease, that it isn't tense, and that it isn't grumpy or grubby. But if it is, no problem. Make peace, be kind, be gentle, and work with that. You just start the cleaning process a little bit further down the track. And then with right mindfulness, important there is that mindfulness automatically arises at this point. If you have done all those steps that I've been talking about, it's something which arises all by itself. Mindfulness means that the mind is clear, that the mind is happy, that the mind is contented already. And what you do then is you gently pick up that mind and give it an object to focus on and let it settle down. And then that way it can become even more pure because there is less distraction. And we can let it linger on our body. We can let it linger on our feelings or sensations or on our mind, on our mind states. Or we can also contemplate things. But that's more outside of meditation. But when the mindfulness is there, you are aware automatically. You're just watching, seeing what's going on, learning. And then we get to right stillness, right meditation at the end of the path there. And that's what the whole other steps have been leading up to. So that is something which happens very, very naturally. If all these things that I have been talking about are in place, then the mind goes into stillness, into collectedness, into one-pointedness, all by itself. It's not us doing it. We are putting the causes in place, and when the causes are in place, we let go deeper and deeper, and the mind is drawn into these states very, very naturally. And that's when we get rid of the last hindrance, which is the hindrance of doubt. Did the Buddha know what he's talking about? Did this Bodhi guy here who's leading the meditation, does he know what he's talking about? Am I someone who can meditate? Can I understand these teachings? These questions won't come up in your mind at that point anymore because you're experiencing meditation for yourself. You're experiencing stillness. You're experiencing that this path works. You're experiencing that what the Buddha taught was actually correct. So the five hindrances are gone and you're meditating. Okay, let's now get our bodies in a comfortable position, if you haven't already done so, to meditate together. Also, one thing that I wanted to mention here, when I was teaching recently, someone was asking about, you know, how they should be sitting when they're meditating. Please really ask your body, feel into your body what is right for your body, and that changes over time. So it's not always the same. But for myself, I really like to prop up my lower back a little bit. That's kind of what my body needs most of the time. And when we were telling that to that one person and said, look, you know, prop up your back, sit on a chair, stretch out your legs. And the person reported after we taught that the meditation was just so pleasant and so peaceful. So please get your body in a right position. And there is no right position for everybody. It's right for you. And we will be closing our eyes now, so no one knows how you're sitting. So just see if you can bring your body in a kind position. In a position that is matching what the needs are of your body. And the best way to find out what the needs are is to let your awareness linger on your body, first of all. Let it fall back onto your body. And just feel your whole body. And see if there is anything you can do to make it more at ease, more comfortable. My body wants a bit of water. Great. And then what I usually do, and I invite you to go along with me if you like, to go through the areas of the body that usually accumulate a bit of that tension. A bit of stress from what we've been doing before. Like our forehead. See if you can watch it with kindness, with gentleness, and with letting go. Also, your eyes. We're not trying to watch anything with our eyes. So we can relax all the muscles. Same with our cheeks. And also our jaw. Very often our jaws are clenched, ever so slightly. Let your jaw and mouth and tongue just hang loose. And as we're relaxing the whole head, the sides and the back of the head, the top of the head, we can move to another area where we often hold on a little bit. Our neck. And our shoulders. See if you can breathe in some kindness, some warmth in those areas. And when you breathe out, let them relax and soothe. And let that energy of relaxation travel down the right and the left arm, all the way to your hands. letting them relax. Putting them in a comfortable place. And then gravity will do the rest of the job. If at any stage you see that your body could be moved in that area to release that tension, please do so. Wiggle it. Adjust it so it feels just right. Then I usually like to travel down my spine. Relaxing it as I go along. Bit by bit. All the way down to my hips. Letting gravity pull the body down. Letting it settle and rest. And giving kindness to all our internal organs. Very often the belly is one of the areas that we could give a bit kindness. Giving it the space it needs. Letting it deeply relax. And then not forgetting our legs. Making sure they are comfortable. And at ease. All the way. From the hips down to the soles of the feet. Maybe your knees could need a bit of loving, tender care. And as we are hanging out with our body in this way, treating it kindly, that's what creates the relaxation, the ease, and the peace. Let us rejoice in the goodness that we are showing towards our bodies. And delight in the beautiful energy that creates. Settling on it. And encouraging it to grow. And as our bodies become more at ease, they tend to fade into the background. Because they are contented and at ease, they don't demand our attention. And we can go deeper into the mental world. Becoming aware of our thoughts and emotions. The movements, the waves, so to speak, in our minds. And with our thoughts and emotions, you can imagine that they're like a body part. That might be a bit tense or uneasy. So we relate to our thoughts and emotions exactly the same way, like we related to our body before. With understanding, with kindness, without force. And then they as well will relax. And be soothed. And whenever this relaxation, letting go, and the delight that comes with it arises, let our minds be drawn to it, settle on it, and remain, rest. This beautiful energy, still but powerful. And as our emotions and thoughts settle down, the last movement that we will be aware of is the movement of the breathing. The breath gently going in. And gently going out. Completely at ease and trusting this process. Just being with the breath. I'll let you meditate in silence now for the rest of the meditation. Enjoy. And as we are getting closer to the end of the meditation, check in with your body and your mind. As I said in the introduction, our actions have consequences. What were our actions during this meditation? And what were the consequences? And can we learn from this? But don't go looking for what went wrong so much. Rather focus on what has worked. When and how did you become more peaceful? When and how did your body and mind relax? Or when did your thoughts slow down? Or go into the background and maybe even fade away? And if you had the company of your breath, if you were hanging out with your breath, how was that like? What was it that you might have done or not done which made your breath more at ease, more at peace, more still and joyful? This is how we learn to meditate. And this is also how we motivate ourselves to meditate. Understanding what the results are of meditation. Peace, stillness, ease and relaxation, but also understanding and the willingness to try again, begin again, try a different way if something doesn't work. So we can now slowly make our way back into our bodies, feeling our bodies. And through the body and the senses, we start to reconnect with the world out there. But don't open your eyes yet. Take your time to transition. And listen to the ringing of the bell 3 times before coming out of your meditation. Okay. Welcome back. So this is the part where we open up for questions, if you have any. If you just came for the meditation, please feel free to go and do whatever you need to do. We usually also have questions that people want to ask online. No questions. Okay, we have questions here. Yes, please use the microphone. Yes. Which microphone? I don't know. Sound man? This or that one? Because then they can hear it online as well.
Can you hear that?
Yes, that works. That's great.
That one's a dud. I found I was in a lot of pain because I've got like a degenerative condition. I don't know. I was centering with my breath and then I got uncomfortable and had to move around a bit. And then I started going through like loving kindness, like may I be happy, may you be happy, may all be happy with people that are struggling. And then I started doing it on bits of the body.
Right.
That my body, I was going, right ankle, may you be happy. And it seemed to like dissipate the pain and the
Great.
Pain started to let go.
Great, wonderful.
But I've never done that before.
Well, there you go. So you've done it and you have, as I was saying, reflected on what the results are of it. And the results are good, so carry
yeah,
on
do
doing
that
it.
Again.
Wonderful.
I'll
yeah.
Do that
so
again.
That is actually why we do the sweep through the body. So the body I often call the outer layer that we work with first because it's the most coarse part. If we focus on something which is very subtle straight away, it's very difficult because the mind is a subtle object. So we stay with the body. So even if you do a body sweep for a long, long time, up and down and up and down. That's fine.
So and that's then kind of normal.
Yes. And then once once your body actually starts to relax and feel at ease, then you can start to settle your mind on that feeling that arises. And that will allow your body to become so relaxed and so at ease that it kind of drops off the radar. And that's when you're starting to shift to the more subtle worlds, the mental world inside. But very often they work together. But I try to encourage people, even when there is thinking, when there are emotions, instead of trying to work with the thinking and the emotion, if the mind is not subtle enough, to take it back to the body and see, where do I feel this thought? Where do I feel this emotion in my body? And then can I relate, exactly as you were saying, relate to my own body with loving kindness, to my own body with tender, loving care.
Thank you very much, Venerable.
You're welcome. Okay. Do we have any more questions from here? Yes, please.
Yes, Venerable, whereabouts do the defilements or asavas come into meditation?
Well, they arise automatically. You don't have to do anything about that. Yeah, basically the asavas are the movement of the mind which is flowing out into all sorts of things. And the biggest one there, of course, is the sensual desire, is the wanting to get some, you know, stimulation from your senses or from thinking. It always has to do with the senses, with the five senses that we have, the bodily senses, but also the mind sense, but it's connected with the world. And basically the mind flows out because it's not happy. So what we are developing in meditation and with the Eightfold Path is happiness. And when we develop happiness and contentment, the mind doesn't want to flow out because it's happy and contented. Thank you. Happy and contented where it is. So why flow out? It stays. And then the energies flow in instead of flowing out of you. That's how you work with the asavas. But they will be there because that's just a normal way of how we are in the world. We want to experience, we want to be, or we want to not to be, we want to get rid of things. That's the outflowing of the mind. But we encourage to just be peaceful and be contented and let the energies flow in instead of flowing out. I hope that answers the question, sort of. Very good. And we have one from the internet here. Oh, very good. Flavio Stucchi from Switzerland. That's where I'm from originally. I know him. Oh, okay. Danke vielmals, Bante. So he writes in German and says, thanks very much. How to deal with emotional pain in meditation? It seems like my mind tries to make a story around it, but it's rather just a feeling. Well, funnily enough, I think I have answered that question already. So thinking is what perpetuates those emotions. So once you are angry, for example, if you stop thinking about the person or the situation which makes you angry, the anger will dissipate very, very naturally. So the thinking process, especially the thinking process of focusing on the negative, focusing on what should be different, on focusing on what we don't like, that's what feeds that emotion. But when we just hang out with the emotion, when we just, I often, people who have me heard teach before, I always use that simile of the child. So a child is throwing a tantrum and you don't explain to the child, you don't negotiate with the child, you don't kind of get angry at the child back because it doesn't help. You just give it a hug. You give it reassurance, you care for the child, you care for your emotion. And then that turmoil which is in that child can calm down, can dissipate, because you are offering it a place of safety. You're offering it a space to just hang out and be. And the anger or any other emotion is kind of like that child throwing a tantrum inside of you. And as I said before, if you want to work with your body, that's another good way to work with it. Every emotion has an imprint in the body, and that's something which is much more tangible. And when you work with that, when you send loving kindness to that, when you relax that, you relax the emotion at the same time. Okay, I hope that makes sense. Do we have any more questions from the floor here? No. Okay, so thanks a lot for coming along for another meditation. Please carry on practicing, carry on meditating, but please carry on walking on the whole Eightfold Path, because that's what leads to the eighth factor of Samma Samadhi, of right meditation, right stillness, and then it arises all by itself. Okay, let's pay homage to the Buddha and Dhamma and the Sangha to finish off. If I can move it here. Here we go. If you happen to have questions you would like to ask in person, we will stick around for a little while. If you didn't want to ask on the internet, we will stay. Or just comment or whatever. We'll be around for a little while.